Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. It's Tuesday, September 21st, 2021. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlanda is here with me. And if you listened to the previous episode of the Eye on College Basketball podcast, you know that it focused on Kentucky securing a commitment from five-star forward Chris Livingston, which gave the Wildcats two of the top six prospects from the class of 2022, among them the number one overall prospect, Shaedon Sharpe. And one of the points we made in that episode is that because UK was, at the time, also the perceived leader, according to 24/7 Sports Crystal Balls, to eventually land five-star center Derek Lively, who is, by the way, the second-ranked prospect in the class of 2022, it appeared John Calipari was on the verge of having an all-time great class, at least according to the numbers. At the time, again, according to 24/7 Sports, Kentucky was the favorite to eventually enroll the prospects ranked number one, number two, number six, and number seven, go big blue. But then John Shire, Duke's coach in waiting, went out and screwed it all up for the Wildcats, because on Monday night, Derek Lively committed to Duke instead of Kentucky. Dead leg. How did John Shire trick last week's crystal balls and beat Kentucky for Derek Lively? Make sense of this important development.
If you hear the Duke fans, it's a very important development, as it specifically as it pertains to this podcast. I mean, I think we got some people frustrated. This wasn't an emergency Monday night podcast in the middle of September over I'm Duke like, landing
first
Derek
off,
Lively.
Derek Lively committed while I was on radio. He didn't plan around me, so I'm not planning around him. No, sure. And then, like, I was trying to watch Aaron Rodgers and spend time with my family. We'll get to it. We're here. Yeah. We're here now.
Rodgers just destroying me, and I'm a Bears fan to begin with, and then he made sure that I took a fantasy loss, so not too happy with that. But, yeah, let's talk Lively here. Great job by Shire and the staff. We will have something pertaining and relating to Duke and John Shire with our candid coaches coming very soon at the site. And in talking with a few coaches the past week or so, it was kind of like, you know, Mike Krzyzewski still has a lot of presence, influence over the program right now. Obviously, he's still the head coach. But the fact that Shire's been able to do what he's been able to do as the lead assistant and the coach in waiting has been really impressive. The recruiting class that he is building up, like, there's not going to, from a recruiting perspective, there is not going to be any drop-off when Mike Krzyzewski retires and Shire takes over. Again, this is for the first year. We'll see where we're at in year three, year four, year five, but it's very, very impressive. I'm going to leave the bulk of the heavy lifting with what Shire's been able to do to UGP, because I want you to hit on the points that you hit on in your column today. If you're listening to this podcast, which you are because you're listening to it in the description.
There's actually no way to hear what you just said without listening to the
exactly.
podcast.
Exactly. You cannot hear what I said unless you're listening to the podcast. There will be a link to Parrish's column in the podcast description, so be sure to check on through and read that as well. I'll just talk about Lively real quick here. We saw him over the summer, and we both loved him more than his teammate Jalen Duren. This isn't about Jalen Duren. I'm just saying, when we watched him play, not only did he look like a really, really good player for his age and at the grassroots level, you know, NBA scouts were on hand to watch some of this, and I talked to, I don't know, three or four of them who all said, like, as we're sitting there watching team final, they're like, that guy, pointing to Lively, he's like, now that's the guy who actually projects as like a potential really good 10-year NBA player, maybe even an all-star, because he shoots it well from deep, was the best shot blocker in EYBL this season, clearly one of the two or three best defensive players out there. And it's not just that he blocks shots. He can switch out on the perimeter, can guard multiple positions, a lot of really enticing talent. If you haven't yet seen who Derek Lively is, he's, you know, 6'11", lean but strong, well-balanced with both of his feet, good base. And, yeah, this is a player who I think will have a very good shot at being one of the 10 best players at the end of his freshman season at Duke in college basketball. I think he's got that kind of ceiling. And certainly if that's going to be the case, he is going to be a player projected in the lottery in the top 10, potentially even in the top 5, because he is what you want a modern big to be. He can stretch it, shoot it, play wonderful defense, high IQ, really, really good player. This is a wonderful get for Duke and for John Shire to have a player like Lively, in addition to Derek Whitehead and everyone else they're going to have coming into that program. He's going to inherit something pretty damn nice in his first season once he picks up next year after Kay retires.
Yeah, this is one of the points we made, and as we were at the EYBL in North Augusta, and I was seeing Jalen Dern for the first time, and I was like, I don't understand. Like, he doesn't look like the number one player in the class to me. In fact, I'm not even sure if he's the best player on his own team because of Derek Lively, who I think does project as a better NBA prospect than Jalen Durham. We'll see who's going to be the better college player over time, but I do think he probably projects as a better NBA prospect, if only because, and it's not only because, but you mentioned he's 6'11". He might be. I've never measured him, but he is listed at 7'1", 220. And as you noted, isn't some knockdown 3-point shooter, but he did take them on the EYBL circuit and make them at a percentage that suggests maybe he can actually do this as his game progresses, as he matures and gets older. Either way, after Amani Bates and Jalen Dern reclassify to 2021, Derek Lively becomes the number two prospect in the class of 2022 behind Shaedon Sharpe, who is committed to Kentucky. So right now, John Shire has secured commitments from 4 5-star prospects since being named the coach in waiting in June. It's Derek Lively, who's ranked second in the class of 2022, Derek Whitehead, who's ranked 5th in the class of 2022, Cal Filipowski, who's ranked 8th in the class of 2022, and then Caleb Foster, who is ranked 12th in the class of 2023. Duke also, Shire, has secured a commitment from Jaden Shute, who's a 4-star prospect, ranked 56th in the class of 2022. So what I'm about to tell you is true. At this very moment, Duke has the number one recruiting class in 2022 secured. And at this very moment, Duke also has the number one recruiting class in 2023. As I pointed out in the column, John Shire will not be able to prove he was a worthy successor to Mike Krzyzewski until he moves over a chair and he's actually the head coach and he's completely running the program and coaching the games. Anybody speaking definitively about what that's going to look like today is mostly just guessing. There is a long list of assistant coaches who I personally believed would be amazing head coaches. And they got their opportunities, and for whatever reason, it just did not go well. So while I'm a believer in John Shire, and if I had to bet, I'd bet on him every time, you just don't know until somebody does the job. That's just a fact. And so we'll see what it looks like when he's the head coach in the 2022-23 season and for presumably years to come. But there is no getting around the fact that in all of the ways you can measure success in the role that he currently occupies, he is knocking it out of the park. He has gone from the former Duke player who is on Mike Krzyzewski's staff to the coach in waiting to the man who has at this moment got Duke in a position to be the number one class in 2022, the number one class in 2023. And oh, by the way, on Monday night when he got Derek Lively and beat John Calipari and the Kentucky staff, it's the second time he's done that. The other time being with Cal Filipowski. And oh, by the way, you don't see this too often. 2 consensus top 10 centers in the same class picking the same school. Like, that's an obstacle you have to overcome to convince Derek Lively and Cal Filipowski they can play theoretically together. Whether they actually can, we'll see, in a couple of years. But you've got to convince them of that or you can't get this done. And, that it's done suggests that John was and his staff were very effective in that role. He's knocking it out of the park. We'll see where it goes. In the next 5 years, 10 years, but you couldn't be off to a better start than the start he's off to. And should be noted, Duke is also considered the favorite right now for Mark Mitchell, who's ranked 16th in 2022, 6'8 wing, and J.J. Starling, number 33 in 2022, 6'4 combo guard. So this class that is ranked number one in the country right now is probably going to get better.
Yeah, and we've got a nice little chase here. We were a little too aggressive in declaring Kentucky was going to lock up the number one class because the Lively commitment just flips it, basically. But Kentucky still has a chance to land another really, really good player as well. And so, hello, here we are. I mean, Duke and Kentucky, just like the old days, which was basically what it was for the majority of 2010 to 2017, 18. One of the two was number one, and usually the other school was number two in the overall rankings there. Doesn't guarantee success, of course, in that whole span of time. Kentucky has won national championship, and Duke has won national championship. Well, two technically, if you want to count 2010 with Duke, but that was right at the start of when Cal arrived at Kentucky. But yeah, this is clearly good for the sport in terms of off-season headlines and interest. If you've got the two biggest brands in the sport that are vying for the top of the recruiting rankings, and we'll see if this winds up being the case for sure going forward. It very well could be, but in the age of NIL here, it would make sense that schools like Duke and Kentucky, right now Kansas is a highly ranked class, North Carolina has a highly ranked class at this point. These schools, the traditional blue bloods, moving toward the top of the rankings in an era where those traditional basketball powers can offer the most enticing things to players that are not going to choose to go play for Overtime Elite or the G League or overseas with the NBL, et cetera, et cetera. So right now, Duke and Kentucky, and it's not yet decided. We still got time to go, but certainly good on Shire. He has outperformed expectations to this point from a recruiting standpoint, but we wait and see what he does on the bench when he starts. And hello, we still got 14 more months till we get there.
One last thing on this. You know, I started the column, you know, sort of pointing out that there's this old saying in coaching circles that you never want to follow a legend. Like, you might want to follow the guy who follows the legend, but you don't want to follow a legend. And the reason, as the saying goes, is because you can't match that person's level of success. And when you don't match that person's level of success, you're labeled a disappointment and ultimately fired, whether you deserve to be or not. And as I wrote, like, I understand that perspective. Like, I get it. But the flip side of it is that when you do actually follow a legend, particularly a legend and an iconic program who is handing you something that is in tremendous shape. Like, this isn't some damaged Duke program or some damaged Kentucky program. This is Mike Krzyzewski walking away after, we don't know how the season will unfold, obviously, but he's got a team that's good enough to win the national championship on paper, talented enough to compete for the Final Four on paper. So it's not like Mike ran the thing into the ground and then John is going to take over. Like, he's going to take it on a high note. And when you are replacing a legend, undeniably big shoes to fill, but when you're replacing a legend under these set of specific circumstances, yes, there's pressure to keep it going, but it's also, you've got a lot of advantages that allow you to, it sets you up for success. Like, we talked about this when it was official that John was going to be elevated to the head coach. It's a guy who was trying to get the DePaul job 2 months earlier, right? Now, think about what you'd rather be. Like, at DePaul, you're not following a legend, but good luck trying to get that program back to respectability. Long list of guys who hadn't been able to do it. At Duke, yes, big shoes to fill, but you are recruiting from the Duke brand. You are able to utilize all of the decades that Mike Krzyzewski built this into something, and now Kay's not there, but it's still Duke, it's still Cameron Indoor, it's still national television twice a week, it's still playing in the biggest neutral court events in the country, it's still strong Nike connection, it's still incredible, I'm assuming, name, image, and likeness rights possibilities. You know, so that's the, you know, I get why you don't want to follow a legend, but in this case, like, following a legend allows John to have a better chance at incredible success than any other first-year head coach, perhaps in the history of college basketball, is ever going to have had. He, based on this recruiting class that he's going to enroll before he coaches his first game, you know, he'll be among the list has got to be short. Somebody who, in their first year coaching college basketball at any level, is going to have a roster good enough to win a national championship. He's in a great place. Moving on, speaking of Duke, Blue Devils legend J.J. Redick announced his retirement Tuesday morning. We'll spend a few minutes on that next, but first, check this out.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third-row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
So Duke legend J.J. Redick announced his retirement Tuesday morning. We don't usually talk about NBA players because this is a college basketball podcast. We really only talk about college basketball, dodo birds, camel fighting, and vaccines. But J.J. Redick isn't just any old NBA player. He's a former college star. He won National Player of the Year awards in both 2005 and 2006. He was a two-time ACC Player of the Year, two-time ACC Tournament MVP. He's the all-time leading scorer in Duke history. His number four has been retired by the Blue Devils. Deadleg, there is no argument that J.J. Redick isn't one of the greatest college basketball players in history, is there?
No, there's not. And weirdly enough, Redick's final season was 06. Who came into Duke once Redick was going out?
John Shire.
Yes. Shire was 2006 to 2010, and Redick was out in 06 and moving on to the NBA, where he was the number 11 pick overall. Yeah, Redick was highly regarded going into Duke. This just landed at an interesting time. I just wanted to talk a few couple things on Redick here. High school parade All-American. Yes, he was the player of the year in 06, shared it with Adam Morrison, two-time consensus All-American, Naismith Award winner, two-time ACC player of the year, four times All-ACC all four of his years. They're All-ACC freshmen and averaged 19.9 points across four seasons of college basketball. Fairly impressive there. And three-point-wise, I mean, he made 3.3 a game and took 8.1 and shot 40.6% for his career. He is an all-time college basketball player. There's no doubt about it. A couple thoughts spring to mind here. First of all, I mean, did you feel like arthritis in any of your joints when you saw the announcement that J.J. Redick was retiring from the NBA? Like, for me, this is one of those that's like, oh, this is not good. Like, this is not good. Like, J.J. Redick, it feels like 6 years ago I was watching him get just, you know, lampooned by Maryland fans, but he's retiring, man. Like, we're getting old. It's a problem.
Oh, I'm very aware I'm getting old. But I was thinking about this because every once in a while you hear about that. So-and-so's retiring or so-and-so's doing this. And I go, okay, what did I ever, what did I write about him What did I, what games were I? J.J. Redick's last season at Duke, as you pointed out, 2005-2006. I got the job at CBS in July 2006. I didn't cover J.J. Redick at all. I was covering college basketball, but I was a beat writer at the time. So I don't have any personal J.J. Redick stories at all, although I very much remember following the J.J. Redick-Adam Morrison Player of the Year race, which is, you're better at this than I am, one of the more interesting, if not the most interesting, Player of the Year races we've had in the past 20, 25 years?
Yes. I'm going to note on that real quick. But first, if I had gone to you in July of 2006 and said, listen, you gotta bet your entire savings, whatever your savings was in 2006.
Probably wasn't great back then. Doing better now. We're doing better now.
But to you back then, what's going to last longer? You with your job at CBS or J.J. Redick's NBA career? What would you have said?
Because you've outlasted me.
You've outlasted him at CBS.
I knew I figured I would.
All right. There we go.
I hoped I would. But you think of J.J. Redick as this incredible college player. He spent 15 years in the NBA. That's a real career. I mean, he was not, I mentioned earlier, he wasn't just an NBA player. He's a college star, but he wasn't just an NBA player. I mean, if you do 15 years in that league, that's not easy to do.
And he was on playoff teams most years he was in the league. He actually, I'm going to get to this more in a moment here. J.J. Redick was a humongous college basketball star. Humongous. And the idea that he could ever be the kind of NBA player where the Duke stuff wasn't like the very first thing that you thought about when you thought about J.J. Redick was almost imaginable, him coming out of college. But I think he pretty much did it. He still has a strong association with Duke. And anyone that's listening to this podcast that's under 25, you don't really have any kind of idea how big of a deal J.J. Redick was. There's one or two stars who I think are comparable that I'm going to get to in just a second. But as for your question about the National Player of the Year with Morrison, the only other one that was really close since then, and it wasn't as big of a deal, although I loved it, was Denzel Valentine, Buddy Hield, Oklahoma. That was another one where those two players split National Player of the Year awards at the end of the season the way that Redick and Morrison did. But we don't get that often, really, where you have two guys who have clearly separated themselves from the rest of the sport, but they can't separate from each other and in the process. And in Morrison and Redick's case, opposite sides of the country, two tiny schools, but one's the biggest program arguably in the country. And then Gonzaga at that point, it's not what Gonzaga is today. It wasn't Gonzaga of 98 either, but Morrison was one of the two or three key figures in the history of that program in terms of elevating it. So, with all of that in mind, Parrish,
I would argue the key figure.
I'm going to say Mark Few's a little bit bigger than Adam Morrison. Oh,
that's fine, but who is more famous as a Gonzaga player than Adam Morrison? Emphasis on the word famous.
Derek Rivio.
Derek Rivio. I do remember Derek Rivio. Yes. No, Dan Dickow.
Exactly.
I love the Zags. But
Rui Hachimura, maybe, because he was a humongous deal in Japan. But if we're only saying here in the States, it's obviously Adam Morrison. Yes.
Well, Rui Hachimura is probably the right answer because of how big of a deal he is in Japan.
Yes.
Do you know, the Grizzlies had Yuta Watanabe a few years ago? And it was there were 50 people from Japan living in Memphis covering Yuta Watanabe. It was outrageous. And so Rui Hachimura might be internationally more famous than that, but you get the point. Adam Morrison is a all-time great college basketball figure. And what I remember about that is J.J. Redick was a star. But first off, when you step foot on campus as a white guard at Duke who can actually play, you're a star. It's over with.
And then he's cocky on top of it. So then...
So you're not... And then you're hated. There's a certain cycle to this, which is another interesting thing. I saw this on Twitter. Somebody make the point, I believe it was Barstool, that, it's wild to think about. J.J. Redick went from this despised college basketball player to a pretty likable NBA player. People like J.J. Redick. Yeah. I think he's funny and smart and all those things. And so... what I remember about that is J.J. Redick was an established college basketball star, really unlike anything we have anymore. A guy who goes to a program like Duke and is a high-level player for four consecutive years, wins at least a National Player of the Year as a junior, then comes back as a senior. Yeah. And then the other side of it was Adam Morrison, who kind of came out of nowhere. We've talked about it before. It was Maui Invitational, and Morrison goes big on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And... I remember Gonzaga was coming into FedEx Forum that year to play Memphis. And by the time that game happened, it was like you tickets were outrageous. Everything sold out. Adam Morrison was a rock star in yes. sports because of the long hair, the mustache. And so it was, and then there's like, you would hear stories or see stories. Adam Morrison and JJ Redick now play video games together online. And they're both like these massive figures in college basketball. It was a really, it was a neat time. And that was the season before I moved from the commercial appeal to CBS Sports.
Duke went 32-4, Redick's final season in college, got beat. Trivia time. How did Duke lose in the tournament that season?
LSU, big baby.
There we go. Sweet 16 loss. And but Duke was the number two team at
KenPom. Big baby. And who was the other player on the team, LSU, the tall?
They had a couple. They had Tyrus Thomas. He went to the NBA. Big baby.
Got seats for Watch the Throne in New Orleans. Jay-Z and Kanye West. Floor seats. Awesome. Behind Tyus Thomas.
There we go.
Couldn't see a thing. I could see, but I had to move around him. He's tall.
Garrett Temple also on that LSU team. Love remembering some guys here. Duke was the number two team at KenPom that season, even with the Sweet 16 loss. Gonzaga was the number 33 team, despite a 29-4 record. Also lost in the Sweet 16. We know how that ended. UCLA. There we go.
J.J. Redick's 4 years in college.
Yeah.
Never won a national championship. Helped Duke get a number one seed 3 of the 4 years, but lost in the Final Four 1 year and then in the Sweet 16 in 2005 mm-hmm. and 2006. In order, J.J. Redick was eliminated from the NCAA tournament by Kansas in 2003, UConn in 2004, Michigan State in 2005, and LSU in 2006.
Yeah, Morrison and Redick having their college careers end on the same night, that Thursday of that season was it wasn't like a major shock, but it was pretty sizable. Duke was expected to beat LSU, and Gonzaga was certainly seen as capable of knocking off UCLA, and then they collapsed there. All right, here's where I want to get to some fighting here, okay? Feel free to leave your opinions in the reviews or find us on Twitter. I tried to identify the 10 most famous college basketball players since the turn of the century. Now, my cutoff is this. If you played a college season in the year 1999, you are not eligible. So guys who might be in the conversation like Juan Dixon at Maryland, who won a title, Jay Williams, who was a huge deal at Duke before J.J. Redick, they started in the 90s. They don't count. These are my 10. And then if you disagree, give me a couple names, and I'll give you the other names eventually that I considered. Now, this isn't just accomplishment. I'm trying to identify literally the 10 most famous, recognizable, big-name players in men's college basketball this century. All right? So here it is in chronological.
Let's do this.
You want to try and guess?
Throw out names and see how many I match on you.
Okay. Yeah, so you're going to throw out the names and see if you can get them?
Okay, so obviously J.J. Redick.
Yes, he's one of the 10.
Adam Morrison.
Yes, clearly one of the 10.
Let's stay with the white guys. Jimmer.
Definitely one of the 10, yes.
He just is.
Yes.
He just is. Okay, Zion.
Absolutely one of the 10. I argue he is the most famous of the 10 because of the social media era. Barack Obama went to his games as supernova. I think he's number one.
Anthony Davis?
I don't have Anthony Davis on this list. If you said 10 most talented college basketball players, he's on the list. I'm sorry, Kentucky fans. I don't think Anthony
Davis
is
National player of the year who won a national title at Kentucky.
Wait till you get to the rest of these names. Also taking into account the fact that he is one and done. And if you stay in college a second year, a third year, a fourth year, you're clearly more famous as a college basketball player most of the time than if you're a one and done. Zion Williamson was an exception.
I got one for you. My homie Mateen Cleaves.
No. Played in the 90s. Doesn't count. Played in the 90s. And he would not make this list.
He won a national championship in 2000. He's not in the
top. Wait till you hear these names. You've gotten four.
Well, can we at least establish you won a national championship in 2000?
I agree with you.
Stop saying he played in the 90s.
He did, though.
Technically, he did, but he also played in the 2000s.
He did. I told you that the criterion for this was that you could not have played any college basketball in the 90s to be on this list.
That's silly. That's a silly criteria. Okay, let me keep thinking. Jay Williams?
Oh, my God. I told you he's not on the list. Play to the 90s.
I'm brainstorming. I'm not listening. People say you learn a lot from listening, and I just don't do it that much.
You're at four. There's some names on here where you're going to be like, oh, of course.
Okay. Mario Chalmers.
What in the world? Not even under consideration.
He hit one of the most famous
shots.
He's
not one of the 25 most famous players of the century. No, not in the college. No.
Chalmers for the top.
Come on, dude. I thought you'd get to 5 out of 5.
Okay. Robert Dozier. Dozier for the championship. You left Chalmers and Dozier off? That was one of the most famous shots and one of the most famous missed shots
not
in the history of the NCAA tournament.
Not on the list.
Okay, I give up.
Oh, give me one more. Dude, who is the most famous vilified white player ever?
Oh, Grayson Allen.
There we go.
I was just tired of naming white guys. It seems racist on some level.
He's 5. Okay. Here's the rest of the list. 2-time national champion, 4-year player, lottery pick.
Oh, Tyler Hansborough. He's not a 2-time national champion, but he's got to be on the
correct.
List.
Correct. He's on the list. Arguably number 2 behind Zion, Tyler Hansborough. 2-time national champion.
Ben Hansborough. Put Ben Hansborough on too.
How about this? Ben Hansborough, second team All-American.
Don't tell
crazy.
Me.
2-time national champion, 4-year college player, lottery pick, Joakim Noah.
That's a good one.
Tyler Hansborough. This next one, the first one in the line here. I almost went with Trae Young here, but Trae Young did not make the list. Remember, Trae Young was literally getting updates on broadcast with his stat line to the point where he became hated. Like, people hated Trae Young on a level that was approaching J.J. Redick, and he was only a 1-year player. But Trae's not on the list. So instead of...
People were hating Trae Young? I don't remember
kidding
that
me?
At all.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I know Knicks fans hate him now.
I talked to his family about this. It was a story that I was going to write and then eventually never wound up writing because they didn't want to bring more attention to it. But yes, he's faced like a lot of venom. Was not popular. But I knocked off Trae for Carmelo.
The idea that Trae Young was hated nationally by college basketball fans is not accurate. That can't be accurate. Nobody cared that much.
People literally had visceral...
He was just a little guard at Oklahoma.
They had negative visceral reactions
to
the way that ESPN covered Trae Young. That was definitely a thing.
Really?
We used to go Trae Young over-under on this podcast.
We did
led
do
the
that.
Nation in points and assists as a freshman and never done before. Trae Young borderline made this list. Only because Oklahoma, frankly, didn't make a Final Four. He didn't. But who I did put on there, I did put Carmelo Anthony on this list because he was
heralded.
First game ever in college basketball on ESPN at the Garden. Syracuse wins the national title. Carmelo.
Oh. Guess who was at that game?
Derek Rivio.
Derek Rivio was not there. Neither was Ben Hansborough. GP was there.
Do you know Ben Hansborough wasn't there? Can you prove that?
I think I can prove that.
Okay.
I'd have to go
let's
back.
Work on that one for the next one.
I think I could. Next as soon podcast. As I solve this Brian Laundrie situation.
You want Carmelo Anthony or you want Mario Chalmers, by the way?
Oh, Carmelo, definitely.
Exactly.
I was at Melo's first game and last game. First game, trivia time. Who'd they play?
Memphis.
What was the outcome?
Memphis and Syracuse lost.
Jeremy Hunt balled out on Syracuse.
Melo had a breakaway dunk, and Dick Vitale lost his mind. Melo was highly hyped going in, and he lived up to it. He's got to be on the list. So chronological: Carmelo, JJ, Adam Morrison, Joakim Noah, Tyler Hansborough. You've already said Jimmer, Grayson, Zion. We got two more players here. I went Stephen Curry.
Definitely.
Makes the Elite Eight and returns All-American twice. He's on there. I put in Stephen Curry, and I bumped Emeka Okafor, Defensive Player of the Year, 3-time All-American, Academic All-American at UConn. Huge, huge presence. But I think Stephen Curry was more famous than Emeka Okafor. And the last player was a different UConn player, easily a top 10 most famous player, Kemba Walker. Carmelo, JJ, Adam Morrison, Joakim Noah, Tyler Hansborough, Stephen Curry, Jimmer Fredette, Kemba Walker, Grayson Allen, Zion Williamson. I think those are the 10 most famous college basketball players of the past 20 years. Parrish wants to throw in Mario Chalmers, you're out of your mind. And then here are the other players that didn't make the list. Emeka Okafor, Trae Young, Anthony Davis were my first three cuts. Then you get into Kevin Durant, but one and done. Derrick Rose, but one and done. Michael Beasley, but one and done. Michael Beasley was an insanely good player, but I just don't think he was one of the 10 most famous. John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins, clearly. Greg Oden makes the title game in 07. Doug McDermott was a three-time first-team All-American, but he was not one of the 10 most famous players. Shabazz Napier won a national title with UConn. And then, like, Chris Jenkins and Jalen Suggs became famous because they've hit two of the four or five biggest shots in the history of the sport. Didn't quite make it. Cade Cunningham last year, not quite. Lonzo Ball, not quite, although his dad really tried to get there. But
Lonzo was super famous.
He was.
We're just going by famous. He was super famous.
He was, but I don't think he's quite top 10. That's basically the list. If you want to get nuts and throw Obi Toppin into consideration, he wasn't easily top 10. But anyway, anyone else I forget in that list?
Mateen Cleaves.
Yeah. I still, even, but now that you've heard the list, Mateen Cleaves is in top 10.
It's a good, I give you, sometimes you have some ridiculous lists. That's a pretty good list.
I rank really every team list in the sport. Of course I have ridiculous lists, but this one, yeah, I think, but if you disagree, we do want to hear your feedback. Let us know. But I figure JJ Redick retiring was a good time to just, well, let's just trot out a few names here. People that are too young to remember don't realize how huge of a deal and really how hated.
Grayson approached it.
He did.
He was certainly more hated than Trae Young, Grayson Allen was.
He was, yes. I would say Grayson was more rightfully hated. Like, JJ was really, really good, and he knew he was really good, and he let you know he was really, really good, so people hated him for it. Grayson Allen brought it entirely upon himself with just idiocy on the floor and tripping people left and right to the point where he receives a one-game indefinite suspension. So, yeah, that's all I got.
Before we get out of here, on Monday, you posted 50 things to know about the upcoming season with 50 days left until the start of the season. What do I need to know about this season?
I got to let you know right now. We're 49 to go. You want to know right now?
What do I need to know? If you got a few minutes, tell me what I need to know about this season.
All right. So, yeah, we are approaching that time here. And, I mean, I got some names to know in there. I'm not going to list off a bunch of other names there. But if you want to, first and foremost, if you're listening to this podcast in the middle of September, we love you. We dearly love you, and thank you so much. So you're probably aware of some of the stuff there. But if you want a refresher, this is basically what the piece serves. It kind of gives you some teams to know, some names to know, some good non-conference games, give some opinions on the Baylor and Gonzaga and UCLA and all that good stuff there. Refreshers on conference realignment. Are you aware that the MEAC is now an 8-team league and the Southland lost 5 teams? Southland's still somehow a conference. Not ideal. But I got some conference realignment stuff in there as well. What else? I'll give you some good non-conference games to know heading into the season. Mark them down right now, okay? We got Champions Classic opening night. Here's one thing I mentioned in passing, though. It's not the worst thing in the world, and maybe it's by design, but, like, those are the only two games that matter on opening night. Is that okay by you? Like, we're going to be there covering them, so...
It's actually perfect for because you're not missing anything by being here.
For us, it might serve college basketball a bit better to do something beyond that. But anyway...
Except the truth is, there's two primetime windows. There's two windows at night, and yeah, those are the two games everybody will be watching. Well, you don't need to counter-program that.
I mean, I guess not.
Like they don't do it in college football. Like, you know, they have that big, like, you know, however college football works. Like, they have that, you know, it's the first Saturday of college football, and then there's a game on Sunday night and a game on Monday night, and it's just one game. They don't have multiple games. They say, sure, Hey, we're giving you a quality college football product to watch tonight. This is it. And for basketball, it's like, hey, we're giving you two quality, high-profile basketball games tonight, one after the other, and you can start focusing on other things tomorrow. I actually like the Champions Classic not being counter-programmed at all.
All right, good deal. Here are the first five, or at least five of the biggest non-conference games, non-Champions Classic division to be aware of that first week plus. You got Villanova at UCLA, November 12th. That's on the weekend, that Friday. Texas at Gonzaga, could be a top five matchup. Almost certainly will be a top five matchup. Same with Nova UCLA, could be a top five matchup. And those are on campus games. Love it. Virginia at Houston. I think that's damn intriguing. Houston could be a borderline top 12 team this season. Ohio State at Xavier. Come on now. Good on Chris Holtmann. Doesn't get enough credit for the way he schedules. And then Gonzaga, UCLA, November 23rd, obviously the famous rematch of the Final Four. Epic. That's going to be in Las Vegas. There's a bunch more games that you should know. The two best MTEs, Battle for Atlantis is better than Maui this year. It's not even debatable. Arizona State, Baylor, Auburn, UConn, Michigan State, Loyola, Chicago. Loyola, Chicago was really good last year. It's going to be almost as good this year. And then Syracuse, VCU. And the best four-team MTE is right here in the Nutmeg State where I live. Tennessee, Villanova, North Carolina, Purdue. Those are probably all going to be top 20 teams. GP's got them all. I think he's got all four of those in his top 20 right now. You got UNC top 20?
I do.
Yeah, all four top 20 teams. So that's some good stuff there. Got some league predictions. But, yeah, we are we're 49 days out from the start of the season. Oh, by the way, the one thing I don't have in that I'll mention real quick here because I thought this was damn cool. Did you see the release that came out on Monday where the Pac-12 and the SWAC have entered into this series where we're going to have Pac-12 play road games at SWAC schools? It's not just going to be, you know, the Pac-12 and SWAC teams are going to, they're all going to go play at Pac-12 venues. No, it is going to be a situation where Pac-12 schools will go and play. You know, you've got Oregon, Florida A&M. They're going to do a home and home. USC, Alabama State, home and home. Arizona and Southern are going to do it, a home and home. Prairie View A&M, Washington State, Grambling in Colorado. So this would have been something I would have included in the column, but the news release came out after it went to publish. I think this is just damn terrific. Like, credit to the Pac-12 for doing this. Apparently it had been in planning for a year plus, GP, but the idea that you're going to have power conference schools going and playing at HBCUs, true road games, those will happen in 23 for the most part, 22 and 23. I think it's just a cool thing for the sport, and hopefully we'll see some other leagues be able to do this, because when it comes to the SWAC and MEAC, where they are geographically, like, it'd be great if we saw the SEC or the ACC do this as well, because it's just something that isn't done ever, and the fact that the Pac-12 is doing it, wanted to give them a little bit of love, and credit to Jamie Zdeninovich, who's the number two there, and runs basketball for the league. I think it's a wonderful idea, and I hope it's something that we see sticking around for years and years.
No, it's great. You know, you often, you know, particularly in recent years, hear people in positions of power, whether it's, you know, basketball coaches at high major programs or people who work in conference offices. And they're like, you know, we need to do more for these schools and we need to, you know, create stages for them. And it's like, okay, we'll do it. You know, you have the power to do that. Like, if you're a high major coach and you want to go play in HBCU, you can do that. You're in charge of that. And so it's nice to see an entire conference say, you know what, we'll do it. We'll lead by example. We'll put our money where our mouth is, so to speak. And we're not just going to say we need to do more for these schools and create stages for these schools. We're actually going to create a stage for these schools. We're going to go to these schools. We're going to take our student athletes to these places to be around these other student athletes and to be on these campuses. And so, absolutely, I'm glad you brought it up. It was not in my notes, but it was a significant announcement and one that deserves some attention.
You want to call it a day?
Oh, I wish I could. Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Ellis Kidd, legend. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys for listening once again to the I Own College Basketball Podcast. Middle of the dumbest pandemic of my lifetime. Not even close. Not even close. We've gone from dumbest pandemic of my lifetime to undeniably dumbest pandemic in the history of the world. In the history of the documented world, yeah. There has never been a more idiotic pandemic than this pandemic. If you haven't subscribed yet, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. We'd appreciate it. While you're there, rate it 5 stars. Leave some nice comments. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
May 23rd.
I want to go back to normal.
What's normal?
The Paramount Plus original series, Evil Returns.
We've already hunted werewolves and demons.
And now what? A baby antichrist?
Okie dokie.
Prepare yourself.
You will not beat us.
For the end.
I have visions of hell.
Make it stop. Make it shut up.
You're not gonna survive this.
Evil, the final season. Streaming May 23rd, only on Paramount Plus.